Hey everybody, I'm Vincent Ackard from the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast, joined by my co-host, Phil Vicinanza. Phil, we're back once again, episode number 33. It's going to be a good one. How are you feeling tonight?
You know, first of all, you had number 32 in the description, and I had to change it real quick, but you know, I got this feeling like there's a game of kickball going on somewhere, and you know, you're the best kicker around, but for some reason, they didn't pick you to be on the team.
You know, it's hard to know what episode we're on at this point.
I'm not talking about the podcast, but well, I mean, you know, you can take that for what it's worth. But, you know, we don't need kickball because we're kicking it here and we're still having fun. So, yeah, another episode.
Well, let's introduce our guest. Who is our guest tonight?
I don't know who is. Oh, okay. That's my turn. Okay. So good time right now to make sure you like and share this podcast. Everybody can jump in and hear our guest story tonight. He is a veteran driver. If you don't know anything about maybe who he is, you know his last name, and then you start rattling off the trucks he's all been a part of, then you know exactly who we're talking about. Driven so many different trucks, best known for his own trucks, Disturbed. And now, Beach Bum, our guest tonight is Brian Christensen. Are you ready?
Brian Christensen, welcome to the show tonight. How are you doing?
Good, good. I still am just baffled by the fact that you found Tough Enough videos.
You drove it. It counts.
It does, absolutely. It's on the list of, what, 32, something like that?
Some crazy number that only very few have more of, one of them being your father, Craig. So yeah. A lot of years, a lot of history, and thank you for joining us here tonight.
Of course. I'm excited. So I even took notes. You know, I got notes here, so I don't forget any good stories for you.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully we get them all. We hit all the marks here.
Yeah, well, we'll go over it. There's going to be no 3 hours. So.
Well, we've done it before. We're not opposed.
Not afraid to do it again. But you know what, Brian? We'll start it off how we normally do. This is kind of self-explanatory, but, you know, how did you get your start in the motorsports industry?
Well, you're right. It is pretty self-explanatory. My dad owned trucks as I was growing up. And, you know, when I was a teenager, I felt that I was smarter than him. So I cut away right after I turned 18, cut away and I went on the road. And I actually went to work for Rex Smith. And I drove, my very first truck I ever drove was King Kong. So I did one round of King Kong and then I did one round of Awesome Kong and got fired right after that. So. But, yeah, that's a story in itself. But, you know, went from there, you know, to Terry Woodcock picked me up and helped me out, helped me get home. Then I worked for my dad for a little while. I, you know, halfway backflipped, you know, his truck on accident, still learning how to drive. Then from there, it just kind of snowballed. From there, I went to Paul Schaefer to Calvin Carrington to Jack Caberna to Christopher Roy. And I mean, the list goes on. I've driven for a lot of the teams out there, and it's been a ride. It's been 21 years now that I've been away from my dad doing this on my own. So Disturbed itself is 15 years old. So, which is crazy to think about.
And it's crazy. You know, I don't think a lot of people realize the amount of teams you were involved with. They know the greatest hits and. I think a lot of people would expect you to just stay under the Team KCM banner, but you made it very clear from the get-go that you didn't want to be with your dad's team at the start. You know, you said you kind of knew it all, but what were you thinking when you wanted to break away from what was probably an easy job to get into?
You know, I could say, you know, that I didn't get the seat when I wanted it or whatever. But truth be told, I was a dumb teenager. I wanted in the seat worse than anybody, and he was not ready for me to be in a seat. So I thought I'd one-up him and walk away. And I mean, I owe my whole career to my dad. You know, I mean, I wouldn't have got the start in it if he wouldn't have, you know, if he wouldn't have got in it. And but I feel like once I cut away from there and stopped driving for him, and where I've been out trying to build a name for myself. So there's a lot of talk about second generation drivers, you know, riding the coattails of their dads. And I mean, I want to say that in the beginning, absolutely. I mean, in the beginning, I absolutely rode his coattails, but now a few years into it, I think I've been making a name for myself. So, you know, I mean, I book all my own shows. I've got relationships with promoters all over the country. And I mean, it's my deal now. And, you know, it's been an experience. I'm telling you, it's, you know, 20 some years out doing it away from home. There's some stories there.
No, yeah. And there's a lot, and you know, that takes a lot of courage, especially I think in a situation like your own, where, you know, later on your entire family is involved with monster trucks and almost everybody drove for your father, and to kind of go out there and just do your own thing. And I mean, to make it work, it's a testament to yourself, but yeah, I know there had been a lot of growing pains, and, you know, I'll just go down the line. The first team you said you were with was Rex Smith. You know, how did you just stumble upon Rex? I mean, there's a lot of guys, and why Rex to start?
Yeah, that was one of those deals. I was living in my vehicle, and I the desire to drive monster trucks and be out on the road was so strong that I didn't care who I worked for or where I went. I called somebody, wow, I can't remember who it was now, but and they had been on the road with Rex and said that Rex is looking for a crew guy. And so I called Rex, and he hired me on the spot, you know. And of course, because I used my last name, and I was like, I've got all this experience, blah blah blah. And he hired me on the spot. He put me on an Amtrak and took me all the way out to Ohio, where he's from. And he paid me $100 a week is all I worked for, just because I wanted in that bad. So $400 a month, if you can do math. So it wasn't much, but the desire, the passion for the sport was that strong that's exactly what I wanted to do. And I found a way to go do it. So now it didn't last very long. So, you know, when the first truck, you know, the first time I drove for him, which was the King Kong, I actually beat him in a race. Because if you know Rex, he drove both of his trucks. He hauled them in, tired them up. He drove them both. He never had help, you know. And then I came along, was helping him out. He was still driving both trucks, but he ended up having to race himself. So he asked me if I was ready, and so I'm like, hell yeah, I'm ready. So threw my stuff on and jumped in the truck, and I ended up actually beating him in first round of racing and put him out. Of course, then he kicked me out of the seat, and he finished the race. But then the very next night, he actually had me drive Awesome Kong because he did not want me beating him in King Kong again. So he put me in Awesome, and I went out there, and I beat him again. And after that, he fired me. So it is what it is. But yeah, that's my story with Will Rex Smith. I had a good time on the road with him. You know, we did a lot of the monster trucks on ice, which was stupid, but that was pretty interesting. And we did a bunch of stuff for, you know, Torgerson's TMS, you know, Stanley Torgerson back then, and it was fun.
So how long of a time frame were you with Rex? I mean, your driving career with him was super brief, but sounds like you were with him for a good bit.
I was with him for about a month is all.
Oh, okay. So,
yeah, about a month. And then we had left Quincy, and I actually went straight to – we were going to Terry's to because Rex had just bought a trailer from Terry Woodcock. So we got to his shop, and we started switching stuff out, and he and Rex had told me that I'm staying there. So – and which was fine by me, because at that point it was what it was, you know. So he had no desire to ever let me drive again, and that's not where I wanted to be. So, but anyway, Terry took me in. You know, I stayed in his little apartment above his shop, and I helped him build one of his trailers and made enough money to put me on a Amtrak back home.
So what was it like driving for Terry? What was that experience like with Terry?
You know, I never drove for Terry. With Terry, I just helped him in the shop for those couple of weeks. So he basically just rescued me basically off the side of the highway and gave me a job for a couple of weeks so I can make some money to get home.
You know, I think that's a good follow-up. You know, obviously, if anyone has been watching the podcast, they know how much we've had Terry on and a lot of people that have been involved with his team. They know the amount of trucks that he had. I know you were just there for only a little bit, but was there ever any discussion for you to join with Terry and run a truck for a weekend or so?
No, back then he was more focused on just his one truck and doing his one truck thing, and he really didn't have any desire to really hire anyone. I think, I mean, if you know Terry, he's probably one of the best people in this industry, and he knew that I was stuck and in need, and he bailed me out. He helped me. So that's the way this industry used to be. I mean, people used to help everybody. I mean, it didn't matter what you were doing or how you were doing it. I mean, people would drop everything they had or would rob parts off their truck to get you back going or whatever it took. You know, that's the way this business was. And it's not so much that way anymore, but that's, you know, Terry was one of those original stand-up guys that he didn't care what it took. He was going to make sure to help a guy out in need.
So then you made it home. Then what were you doing? Well, I mean, was there any kind of questions like, you know, reality check in the monster truck business? Now you're back at home.
Well, yeah, I got back and mended some relationships, and you know, my dad was needing some help, and I've been out on my own, you know, doing it. So I went to work for him for a little while, and just kind of filled in when Paul couldn't drive. And, you know, just kind of did my thing, you know, just filled in where I could, helped out at the shop, whatever, whenever kind of deal, you know. And then, you know, things were fine. That's when I got to drive Captain Insano, and that's when I got to drive Mischievous. That's, oh boy. Yeah, that's when I drove Mischievous. And after that one run, my dad probably should have never let me drive again, because I'd never actually hit a raw car before. So I went driving out onto the track, and he coached me. He's like, okay, here's what you got to do. You got to roll up to the car, bump it, you know, get up on it, smash it down, and then back up a good 20 feet or so. And then, you know, rev it up, kill the motor, whatever, and then fire up and go for it. I'm like, okay, cool. I got this. Yeah, I didn't got this. I took off and rolled up to it, hit the car, and kind of climbed up on it, but not really. And I backed up about 10 feet, if that, shut it off. And, you know, they used the RII, and I fired it back up, put her in gear. I rolled up to the car and pinned it. And the thing just jumped straight up in the air over backwards, landed on the cage on top of the cars. So the funny thing is, the way it looked, the whole top of the cage was actually down inside the crush cars. So sitting there watching it, it looked like the whole cage had collapsed. That, you know, I was dead, you know. So my dad was telling me after the fact that it took him a really long time to get out of the truck, and because he was worried that I just killed myself in the truck. And, you know, because I'm a heck of a driver. but anyway, yeah, so I ended up getting out of the truck. Everything was fine. And really, it didn't do hardly any damage. I mean, body a little bit, but he made me, of course, fix that the next day. So my first experience driving his trucks, not so good. The second time, you know, the next night, I spent all day fixing the body, and then went out the next night and did okay. I got the job done. Let's just leave it at that. So, but that was my first driving for my dad. And then, you know, I got to drive Captain Insano on this time that I worked for him. And then right after that, I got the call from Paul Schaefer. So I went to work for him, and Paul Schaefer, you know, great guy, another icon of the sport. I mean, first thing I did for him was, you know, Paul was known to make all kinds of promises to get people out there, and then you end up working in a salvage yard. And that's exactly what happened to me. I went out there, I ended up crewing for what's her name? Sky, and with the boogie van and Skywalker. And Doyle Schmidt in Barefoot. I was crewing for those two. And I worked for him for about a month, and then had my fill of that, because I did two shows with him. And then, He just had no intention of putting me in a truck. And so I packed up. I called Calvin, and Calvin was looking for a driver right then. So that night he sent me a train ticket, an Amtrak ticket, up to Massachusetts. And I'll tell you, out of all the people that I've worked for, Calvin Carrington and Jack Caberna were probably the most knowledgeable people I've ever worked for. Because some of the crap that they scabbed together, stuff's not crap. Don't get me wrong. But some of the stuff, I mean, I went from working for my dad, who had top of the line as best he could do stuff, to Calvin's trucks. Now, you did things a little different at Calvin's shop, but Calvin, I love that dude. Him and I had our spouts, you know, for sure. But I learned a lot from Calvin, and I learned a lot of ways not to do certain things. But we did it to get through the shows. You know, we did it to get through the venues, and we did a lot of our own promoting, self-promoting shows. So I would take off and go and have to do flyers all over the place, and, you know, spend days and days just advertising for these shows. And then the trucks will get there, and then we got to spend days doing displays and whatnot. And there's a few times that all those flyers ended up in the dumpster and I went to a movie, you know, but yeah, that was a ride. I worked for Calvin for almost 3 years. I worked for him. I drove every truck he's got. I mean, every truck he had, all the wrestling trucks, the big names, the Hulkster. Matter of fact, in 2003, this may not sound like much to some people, but in 2003, I won the AMT Freestyle Championship. So that's as far as my championships go. But you know, that's a milestone for me. You know, I was so proud. I mean, I had videos of it, and I sent it back home to my dad, and I don't know that he ever watched it, because he probably didn't. But I mean, I was pretty stoked about that, you know. And then after working for Calvin that time, you know, and that time I worked with Mike Wilbanks, was my partner. He's done a lot with Mike Welch, and he was the one I was on the road with, and I was driving the. I started in Buffalo Tremor, and then Captain Destructo, and then I did The Rock. I did the Stone Cold Steve Austin truck. I campaigned that one most of the time, and then I left, and I went to work for Jack. And the reason I left Calvin's, there was no hard feelings or anything, but I was ready to do something else. I didn't want to do the ice shows for Torgerson anymore. I didn't want to do these backyard shows that Calvin was doing. I wanted Monster Jam. You know, that's where it was headed. So I went to work for Jack, because he ran Monster Jam, and got to his place, and I loved it. Jack and Rocky are great people. They're family. You know, I love those guys. And then I learned Jack's way of doing things. So going from Calvin's way, going from my dad's way to Calvin's way to Jack's way, there was a learning curve, you know, like a learning curve. But Jack is amazing. That guy, he is the only guy I know that can take anything and do some incredible stuff with it. So, you know, there's a reason he's a Hall of Famer, you know, and I hope one day that I can fill those shoes. You know, I love driving Tough Enough. Tough Enough's the first truck I ever drove on TV. I drove Tough for, I worked for Jack for about a year. And then didn't really have a falling out. I made the mistake of going home and for a wedding, and was really homesick, because I'd been gone. At that point, I'd been gone for years. So came back, and I told Jack that I was missing home, and I wanted to go home. And I'm glad I did, because I flew home. At that point, my dad was renting a shop there in West Haven, Utah. And I showed up there, was hanging out, and I actually met my wife. So she is the granddaughter of the landlord. So she walked out. I was actually working for a guy down the road in the same complex, but he was just right. He was like three units over. It was John Schwinn, Dead Eye Welding. I was helping him out, working for minimum wage, of course, but helping him out. And Stephanie walked in and was talking to John about something. I saw her out of the corner of my eye. I was like, ooh la la. But thought there's no way that's happening. But, you know, you got to think positive. But And then she ended up leaving, and John came up, and he's like, "What'd you think? What'd you think?" I was like, "Damn!" And he's like, "Yeah, that's my side piece." I'm like, "What? There ain't no way that's your side piece." So, but he had me thinking that it was. And then she actually ran into me. I ran into her again a little bit later. And at this point, now I'm like walking down to the boat shop just to run into her, you know. And I finally did, and I finally got the nerve to ask her out. And we actually ended up going. The first thing I did with her is I invited her and her dad to a monster truck destruction show or something like that down at the East Center. And they agreed. They said, yeah, I got them tickets. I had no idea where their tickets were. I was working the floor, and I actually saw them as they came in the building. So I saw them and picked them out of that. If you've ever been to the East Center, it's huge. It's a big hockey arena. And I actually spotted them out of that whole crowd. It was pretty crazy. So, and then, yeah, I mean, and then right after that, I drove for my dad a couple more times. You know, that's when I got to drive Dragon Slayer up in Canada. I drove the other captain, the purple captain, Insano, at that point. And, yeah, it's, yeah, you know, and it's funny. One day, my wife's probably going to kill me for this, but sorry. So working in the shop, she came down, and my dad and I were getting ready to go to Reno, and I was driving with the purple captain and Sano this time. And she came to the shop, and she brought us a couple of large pizzas for the road, and she dropped them off because we were in our toter. We got in there, we took off, and not 2 minutes later, she's calling me, and I answer the phone, blah, blah, you know, we start talking, and you know, I thanked her again for the pizzas, and, you know, told her that I already miss her and whatever. And she, right before we hung up, she's like, "All right, I love you." And I'm like, "What'd you say to me?" Not the words that she wanted to hear. I can tell you that from experience now. But she is like, I said, "I love you." So I was like, "Well, I love you too," which was the first time we'd ever said that to each other. And long story short, 2 weeks later, we actually got married. So, yeah, that's my story of my wife.
So I got to ask, what was it like working with family day after day, weekend after weekend during that time period?
Interesting. You know, after working for Calvin and after working for Jack, things got interesting. You know, and I actually missed somebody in there before I didn't. That, gosh, see, I don't even have all my facts straight. But no, it was interesting. You know, I learned a lot. I learned a lot from Calvin. I learned a lot from Jack. And then going back to doing things my dad's way, you know, by then he had kind of changed the way he did things, you know, growing. And so it was interesting to go back to working with Mike again when he was basically, he's now the teenager that knows everything, you know, and we ended up working. I mean, him and I worked really well together. We always worked well together. But, you know, basically I was just helping out, filling in for him, filling in for Paul, you know, whatever it took. But working for my dad again was fun. I mean, it's always a struggle working with family, but I have no regrets. I know where I came from, you know, and I've never been shy about it. So I know where my roots are. I know where I came from, and I'm proud of that.
Hey, Bill, this is a good time. Make sure everybody is liking and sharing this podcast video, especially as Brian continues to tell stories along his journey here in Monster Truck. So make sure you're liking and sharing this video now. And there's been a lot of great guys and gals in the comments. I see Norm Miller's in here. Dylan Fenley calls you his hero. This is just a lot of good questions, including someone helps out with you a lot. It's Levi Shones. And I know Levi's been up and down the road with you quite a bit as of late. And he has a couple good questions here about Calvin Carrington. And one of the questions is, what was Calvin like in person?
He was a good dude. I mean, he liked things done his way, you know, and when we were away from the shop, we did things our way, of course. But anytime we were doing his shows and running his trucks and doing his thing, he was hard to work for. You know, I mean, he likes things done a certain way, and it's his way or the highway. So you fight back with him a little bit, and, you know, you got the ass chewing. But, you know, it's other than that, I mean, Calvin was great. He very knowledgeable. You know, he knew how to get shit done. So, but I really enjoyed working for him.
Another question from Levi. Levi wants to know, how did Calvin's trucks handle?
It depends on which truck. The front engine trucks handled like crap. I mean, it's like any front engine truck. You know, it's they were rode hard and put away wet numerous times. I mean, it's they were beat. You know, and this was before I really knew and understood the shocks altogether. And you know, and I mean, at this point, I could have, you know, looking back on it, I could have redid some things. You know, but I was young back then. You know, and his trucks were great. I mean, they always ran. I mean, turnkey, fire up every single time, never had issues. The trucks hardly ever broke. Funny thing is, I'll just look at it. I remember one show in specific, you know, and that was the second time I worked for Calvin. I was now in the Hulkster, or no, I was in the Rattlesnake 316 truck, and we were out freestyling. I've been killing it all weekend. This is Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's another Torgerson show. Jack and Rocky were there, and you know, I went out and I was freestyling. I mean, that Hulkster truck was fun to drive. Oh, the old Buffalo Tremor, Captain Destructo. It's the old Priority One. That's the truck that I mainly drove for him. And the thing was a blast to drive. I mean, it would stand up. I'd drag the tailgate on it all the time. But I remember one show in specific. We was out there freestyling, and I could feel the transmission slipping. I knew it was going, you know, I'd been running this transmission for almost a year. So, like, we just knew it was about time. But it was slipping and slipping. I was like, all right, I'm just going to get through. Well, back then, the big freestyle motocross ramps were built out of dirt. And I came sliding around. You know, got right at the bottom of it, and it was, you know, the tranny was slipping, so I gave it as much as I could, and it hooked. The tranny hooked, and she sailed. I mean, I hit that right, and I mean, that truck sailed what seems like forever. When it came down, the front spindle broke off, the tire went flying into the tunnel, hit the big loader, shoved the loader back. That's how hard it hit, and the truck almost went over. It dug the front end into the ground, put it up on its nose, and then settled down, but it was spectacular, but Calvin was not happy. So, but that was the biggest damage I ever did to his truck was that transmission, that spindle that weekend. So that was a ride. That was a lot of fun.
So, you know, looking at like Calvin's team and, you know, some of the other teams that you had run-ins with, these are almost all the major teams that have so many different trucks and so many different events going on. Did you always find that dynamic? I mean, I know from an outsider, I always found that dynamic of like a major team to always be can be overwhelming at times, you know, compared to maybe like a one truck or two truck operation. But what were your thoughts, you know, always being a part of like a mega team that would always have different drivers and different bodies at any given point, any given weekend?
I enjoyed it. You know, I really enjoyed working for the team that had a bunch of trucks, you know. We did a lot with the WWF, you know, back then, and we did a lot with the Cub Scouts and whatnot, you know, having the wrestling trucks, and it was cool. It was cool to take, you know, and different truck all the time. I mean, I mainly campaigned the Stone Cold, the Hulkster, and then the Rattlesnake. Those were the three trucks I mainly drove, but I drove all of his other ones. But on occasion, you know, I drove Wildfire once at this event, and then I'd jump in and drive the Rock this event, and you know, I liked it because there was a lot of knowledgeable people there, like Robbie Dawson. Robbie Dawson is another dude that I learned a lot from. You know, he's a character. If anybody knows Flying Robbie, you know, he used to jump dirt bikes over monster trucks, you know, at all these shows, and then he started driving the trucks. But he was another good dude, you know, that taught me a lot. You know, I campaigned with him the second time I worked for Calvin. And him and I traveled up and down the highways, and we had a lot of fun. But I really enjoyed working with big team. We could go in and do our own jokes, you know. We could go in and do our own thing. Yeah, it was more work for us because we had to actually get out and advertise and push the envelope. We had to do, you know, it was up to us to actually do the show. So that was a lot of work, a lot more work than what most of us really wanted to do, but got the job done. It was fun. It was good. It was a very good experience. And I have no regrets as far as working for Calvin, as far as working for really anybody I worked for. you know, and but I mean, I don't know if they watch, but you know, like Calvin, or after Calvin passed, it hit me kind of hard because I looked up to Calvin, but and I said some things to Kelly that I really shouldn't have. And if she's watching, you know, I want to publicly apologize to her. You know, this was a long time ago, and I get that, you know, I mean, bygones are bygones, things are what they are. But I mean, from what I know, her and Rob are extremely happy, and I'm happy for them. It's, you know, I'm glad that Rob was able to step in there and help her with everything after Calvin's tragedy.
No, that's very fair. And, you know, when you're around a lot of these different teams, especially at this point, did you ever, you know, when did you first realize that you wanted to have your own truck under your own name?
Well, I actually always wanted to have my own truck. That was always the ultimate goal, was to figure out a way to build my own truck and do things my own way. And I mean, I tried left and right. I tried over and over trying to figure out how to do it. And after I worked, I kind of jumped a little bit here, but after I worked for Calvin the second time, I actually went to work for Christopher Roy, and I drove Taurus and the High Anxiety and Unforgiven. You know, I drove all those trucks for him. And High Anxiety, yeah, here's a story for you. We were headed to Canada and for a fill for Monster Jam, Vancouver, BC. And as we were on our way, Chris is a character too. Again, no regrets for anyone that I've worked for, but Chris, he's a character. But anyway, we were on our way up to the border, and we always went over this little border, you know, less questions. You know, it's the one that everybody pretty much crosses. And they did not let us. They shut us down. They actually made us backtrack to the bigger border so that they could go through everything. And long story short, they would not allow Chris or the semi in. So we ended up... So me and Jamie actually ended up taking his trailer. One of the Feld trucks came down to the border and picked us up. And Jamie and I rode in with them. We pulled down into Vancouver, BC during the pit party, because now we are super late. But pulled in during the pit party. Neither truck would start. It was so cold. We drug them both out and then got the tires out. Tires are flat. You know, we had to put the hood on the other truck, on Taurus. Just had a ton to do. So got the trucks tired up, got everything done. And I was driving High Anxiety, Chris's truck. Well, if you know Chris, he's 6'2". I'm 5'7 and a half. I mean, I'm short. So I could barely reach his toe strap. But anyway, I lined up, and it's big straight line drag racing. And second round, I somehow pulled out a win. I couldn't tell you how. Second round, I was racing Jim Creighton, and this is one of my highlights. I was racing Jimmy Creighton. Well, we flag dropped, we took off, and I beat Jimmy in High Anxiety with running off of my toe strap, off of Chris's toe strap. But when I landed, it actually broke the whole front corner off the truck. And so they lifted it up, pulled it back, and Jimmy came over, and he's like, yeah, I was only running front wheel drive. I was like, ah, come on. So... I'll give that one to him. But anyway, so went and then I ended up jumping in the Taurus truck because it was having problem after problem, wouldn't start for racing. And then, you know, Jamie was a little frazzled. So I jumped in and drove for her, went out there, made three hits and ripped the hood off and almost rolled the thing over and ended up breaking that truck. So in one weekend, I broke both of his trucks. We shoved them in the trailer with loaders at the end of the night and then made our journey back to the border that same night. So that was a trip for sure. But sorry, anyway, we got off track there. But after working for Chris, I went off, and that's when I came home. That's when I came home, and I actually met Stephanie at that point. And Steph and I got married, and then she basically fronted me the money to buy the first truck, to buy Disturbed. And that was the old Primetime truck out of Florida. So we bought it, brought it back, you know, and we started campaigning Disturbed back in, that was 2005.
Got a question here from Wally Turner. He says, Brian, what do you want to do after Monster Trucks?
I don't know. You know, that has been a question that I've been kicking around for a while, because I'm getting to the point where I don't want to say that I'm too old, because I'm not. You know, I mean, look at my dad. He's still driving. And I mean, Tom Mint, Dennis Ann, I mean, I've got some years still in me, but the industry's changed. So I don't know how much longer I'm going to be doing this. And, you know, it's a scary thought. I've been doing monster trucks for my whole life, basically. And the thought of not doing them anymore is a scary thought. You know, it's been my life. And like I said before, no regrets. I've lived a fortunate life. I met my wife because of them. You know, I mean, it's amazing. You know, I don't know. I've got a lot of things in the mix. I've got hopes and dreams. You know, I'd love to open a tiki bar on the beach someday, you know, or maybe I'll buy out Sniper and, you know, go ahead and kill it off so that no one has to see that thing anymore.
Oh, no. Well, hey, Vincent's wearing the Sniper hoodie, so, you know, we'll let that speak for itself.
We'll let it slide. Yeah, that's all right. No, Wally is one of my closest friends still. You know, he, him and I were team frenemies. It's funny, we used to team up all the time and go on the road, and, you know, we would use my tractor, his trailer, and we would haul our trucks together. And but online, on the internet, we were battling all the time, talking trash, just back and forth. But then in real life, we were buds. You know, we got along great. We travel up and down the highway together. You know, he hasn't been around for very long, but he's got the old school dynamic. You know, he's got the old school attitude where do whatever you can to help each other. And team frenemies, buddy. I was just joking.
Hey, don't worry about it. I'm sure he understands. But
Wally said sold, so
sold. I figured he'd be willing.
Hey, there's another fun comment here. It's from someone that's been on our podcast in the past. It's from Don Frankish. I'm gonna pull it up real quick. He says, "Do you think you will get used to being beat by a dinosaur?" Obviously, the Jurassic Attack's back in action. Man.
You know, I was excited to see Jurassic Attack come back. You know, it's cool to see some of the old names making their comeback, and, you know, on these newer updated trucks. And Jurassic has such a history behind it. I mean, between Don and Lindsay Wink, and, you know, just the whole history. It's just amazing. Nathan Wink was one of my favorite guys to hang out with, and I'd love to race against him. You know, Tuttle's a heck of a driver. You know, and I've always loved the Jurassic Attack. So heck yeah, I'd love to get beat by it. Come on, I'm ready.
And another one of our past guests here is also Steve Corsio. He says, glad to see you're doing good, ready to go run some dates.
Anytime, Steve, anytime.
You know, since we're talking about Steve, I will ask now, you know, do you have any good Steve stories?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, you're right. Yep. When I was working for Jim Creighton, back when he had the Barefoot Monster Patrol, Gino Canal, Dave Woodcock had just left, and Jim hired Russell Steely to fill in to drive Barefoot, and Gino was wanting out, so they hired me to help drive the rig and drive Monster Patrol on occasion. Oh, boy. Yeah. So we went. This is pretty entertaining. This is probably one of my favorite road stories. So anybody that knows Steve knows that he does not come to the shows. If he does, it's a rare occasion. Well, we were in Sterling, Colorado, and Curcio, of course, didn't come to it. What was his name? Dave Gross. He was the coordinator. He was the one traveling up and down the highways, and we were doing show after show with him, and he actually, something happened. I can't remember the emergency, but he had a family emergency and had to leave. So now the coordinator's not there, the promoter's not there, but me and Russ were there, and a couple other trucks. So we basically ran the show ourselves, and, you know, we went out, we helped out with the vendors, we helped out with, you know, basically whatever we could do to help, we helped. Well, I was driving Monster Patrol that weekend, and the sound system was horrible in there. Like any other driver, though, standing out on the tire, hand on the heart, you know, singing along to the national anthem. About four or five words into the national anthem, the music started to cut out, and I kept singing. Well, then the music would come back and it cut me out again. And then all of a sudden it cut out again. So I kept singing. And then the music just ended up cutting out completely. And I sang the rest of the national anthem. So trust me, it is not good. I cannot sing. But hey, the crowd liked it. It's the first time I ever sang national anthem at a show. But that was at a Curcio show. That's one of my favorite memories of running the trucks. Of course, I broke Monster Patrol that weekend. I ripped the wing off of it. And I think that was the weekend I blew both the rear shocks off the left side. So yeah, we not only were running everything, but singing national anthems and tearing up trucks.
Not bad there. I'm sure that's only a once in a lifetime kind of deal. Always with Steve, it's always a fun one. But looking back at your first disturbed truck, I'm picturing when you're on your own with, and it's that white pickup truck. That was really your first time doing your own deal. And what was that truck and stepping out and getting that completed?
Well, that truck was prime time. We bought it out of Florida, an old coilover, old coilover truck that we went, picked up, brought back, and revamped. We pretty much left it alone. It had Ford power plant, Ford training. We didn't really know a whole lot because I've never run Ford before, so it was a learning curve. But it was one of those deals that was too good to pass up, and I was so excited about buying a truck that I didn't care what truck I had. I was buying a truck. So I bought that truck and I had a blast with it. I mean, that was the first time, I actually did a Monster Jam show with Disturbed was in that truck. And I remember the first show we ever did with was Hot Rockin' Forth there in Ogden. And we took it out. It had Adventure Motorsports on the side. It's the Disturbed was back on the very back of the bedside. You could barely read it, but it was fun. That truck was just an old beater. I went out and I was able to make a few passes over the cars, and I hit them way too hard for those old coilover shocks and bottomed the thing out a couple times. But I've got some pretty cool pictures of that old turd flying through the air. But it was amazing. Again, no regrets. I mean, it was a good old truck, and I really enjoyed it. We ran it for many, many years, or for a few years anyway, until we sold out. So we sold out because my son was diagnosed with cancer.
But you're all right. So you're looking at, you're parting your truck out there, and you're really having a big life change. What are you doing at that moment, make ends meet?
Well, at that point we had bought other trucks. We had Disturbed, and then we bought that we called it Possessed. It was the old Skeletor truck. We bought it from Kelly Carrington. And then, we were trying to run them. This is one of, back when we first started with our truck, we ended up getting a dually and trailer. And that's how we hauled around, with an old dually and trailer, like old school. And going to Monster Jam in Sacramento, Donner's Pass was my kryptonite. I could not hit Donner's Pass outside Reno without something catastrophically failing every time. But cruising along in my Dodge, and we hit about Winnemucca, and we could feel the tranny starting to slip. And so I look over at my wife, and she's like, "Oh, great, here we go, another adventure." And we ended up, we just went for it. We stopped, we put a little fresh oil in it, in the tranny. It helped it out a little bit. We got about halfway up Donner's Pass, and tranny was shot. It was gone. It wasn't going anywhere. So we end up stopping, we're broke down on Donner's, freezing because it's snowing, of course. We sat there for about 20 minutes, and a highway patrol ended up pulling up behind us, and ran right into the back of my trailer and pushed us, truck and trailer, all the way, the rest of the way up the hill, and then down an exit into a salt pit. Well, they have these salt pits for their salt trucks to come in and reload so they can keep salt in the roads. We sat there in this salt pit for probably 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours. We had the routine down. We knew who was coming in at what time. Like, we had the salt thing figured out. But we did. We sat there for 8 hours waiting for a tow truck to come get us. And finally they did. We ended up missing the Friday night show in Sac. But they hooked on it. They got us out of there, got us down to the arena, and we finished out the weekend. And yeah, and then the second time going over Donner's. Now at this point, I've got the possessed truck. And so I had disturbed and possessed inside the trailer with a tractor. And we, we made it to Sacramento this time. We turned around, we were on our way back, and the motor let go. It completely locked up on us going up over the mountain, and I'm getting towed off Donner's again. So Donner's was my kryptonite for a while there, and I refuse to go over it now. It's I will drive out of my way to make sure to go around it. But yeah, it's, you know, after those that fiasco and losing the semi and the trailer, and at that, you know, David was diagnosed not long after that. So it was time. It was time to just let the trucks go. And my son's health was more important than monster trucking. And so, and my wife is amazing. You know, she was working as an MA, and she was making really good money because she'd been doing it for 20 years. But she was, you know, so she basically stayed working, so carried our medical insurance. And then I ended up selling trucks off, and I moved into the hospital with David. And him and I fought cancer for the next 8 months. So he went through a lot. He went through six or seven rounds of chemotherapy. And then he went through a pancreatectomy, a spleenectomy, and then he was eligible for a liver transplant, which my aunt so graciously gave up her part of her liver and for David. And then after he got a new liver, they did some like four more rounds of cleanup chemo, and he's been good ever since. He's 15 now, so he's 11 years in remission. So he's doing amazing. But so, and yeah, so right after our hospital stay, I actually took a job with Rod Wood. That's when I drove with McGruff. And, I had a blast with Rod. You know, he has really nice equipment, and you know, I went down to Mexico with it, and we were jumping buses lengthwise. You know, and back then, it doesn't sound like much now, but back then that was cool. That was something we were doing. You know, and I was jumping buses lengthwise. We got some cool pictures, and then we changed the entire shock package. Yes, Rod, I'm still blaming the shock package. Changed the entire shock package. I had no idea what I was doing, but I went out to Anaheim, which was the first time I met Levi, and went out, and we were doing the Anaheim style racing, and took off, went down the tabletop, hung the left, and she flopped right into the dumpster.
Well, Rod is actually in the comments, and he's talking about that right now. Perfect timing. He says, Brian, help me out. When I had my back surgery and drove my girl at a monster show, this was the only time the truck was rolled twice in one show. Yeah. He also went to Mexico with me.
Yep. Yeah, we had a good time. But yeah, so we rolled it into the dumpster. They came, they pulled me out of the dumpster, and we duct taped the thing back together as best we could. Then I went out for freestyle, and I hit the stack. A little too hard. This was back when they first started putting cars up on dirt mounds. And I came out, I hit that just a little too hard. The thing corkscrewed in the air and landed right back on the cage again. You know, so yeah, two crashes one night. He never let me drive again after that.
So you're not driving McGruff afterwards, and then eventually you're not working with Rod. Where does Brian Christensen go next?
Where else? Monster Jam. So I got the call. Actually, Mike set me up with Henry Cross. And actually, no, that's not true. I went to work for Paul Strong. Paul had just bought the Arachnophobia truck, and they were trying to debut Heartbreaker. And they just bought the old Bounty Hunter chassis. So they were in the middle of building Heartbreaker up on Arachna, and then they were switching Martial Law over to the old Bounty. And it was a disaster. One thing after another went wrong for us, and nothing against Paul or Kayla. I love those guys. You know, I really actually miss them, but we, it was a disaster from the minute I got there. But we went to the first show with Heartbreaker, didn't get Martial Law done in time, went to the first show with Heartbreaker, and it just had one issue after another. Wouldn't pass tech. And after that one show, they couldn't afford me. So they asked me what I wanted to do. And I had already been talking with Henry Cross. So Henry put me on the next flight, flew me to Tampa. So my first show with Monster Jam, they teamed me up with Alex Blackwell and Deborah Medusa. So normally Alex and Howie pretty much run their trailer themselves. So it was weird for them to have another guy. And you could definitely tell that they didn't like having another guy. Howie may have liked it, but Alex definitely did not. So, but I learned, that's another guy I learned a lot from. You know, Alex has been with Monster Jam for a lot of years. You know, so I was able to learn from Alex. And there was times I wanted to kill Alex. And, you know, there was times that I thought I was going to kill Alex, but I didn't. You know, but, I mean, Deb was a lot of fun to work for. Actually, right after that first quarter, I came on full time and I ended up moving out to Illinois. And I took on Lupe with Grinder, and I actually asked for Deborah to be my second truck. So, and Deb and I have stayed friends ever since then, too. Same with Lupe. I still talk to both of them. But, yeah, I worked for them. I worked for Jam for a few years, and, you know, we all moved to Florida together. And, I mean, again, no regrets. I mean, I got to see places I never thought I'd see. One of my favorite places we went to with Monster Jam was probably Barcelona. There was so much history in Barcelona and Madrid, Spain. So I went over there with Lupe and the El Toro Loco, and it was a good time. We hung out all the time. My dad was actually on that tour too. He flew out there. He was driving Monster or Max D at that point. So, and Mike was there with Lindsay, and also me, Mike, and my dad, we'd all take off, and, you know, we went sightseeing together, you know, just went check things out. And it was cool. That was a lot of fun. Mexico, you know, was fun with Monster Jam as well, but a little scarier, you know, because of course we had armed guards the entire time we were there. And, but yeah, it was Monster Jam's the next stop after that. So had a good time working for them and got to see, like I say, got to see all kinds of places I'd never seen before. So.
Was it a weird experience for you to now be crewing on the trucks instead of physically driving? I mean, I know a lot of people go to maybe Monster Jam and they crew and they expect to become a driver, and maybe that's not always the correct timeline. But in your case, you were a driver, and then now you're coming into crew. So where was your head during that? Like, was there ever a thought maybe you drive for Monster Jam, or was it weird at first? Where was that at?
You know, at first, no. I was perfectly fine with just coming in and having a job. You know, this was the first time that I actually carried the medical insurance for my family, you know, was through Monster Jam. But Mike Wales and I actually sat down. You know, he was another good dude. Mike Wales and I sat down a few times, and we talked about me driving one of his trucks as a fill-in or whatever. But, you know, I was on too high profile of a team, and unless Lupe got hurt, which Lupe almost slipped and fell a few times. And, you know, not that it's my fault that the slip sheets were left there, but, you know, he almost slipped and fell a few times. But Deborah's truck, I could never fit in her dang seat. But Lupe's seat was so blown out that I fit in her seat just fine, or in his seat just fine. But yeah, Lupe almost had a couple of accidents that he wasn't aware that he was about to have. But no, I never did get to drive a Jam truck. You know, it just wasn't in the cards, you know, which again, I mean, I don't mind. I learned a lot, you know, with those guys. Again, now we're talking about going from my dad's shop to Calvin's shop, Schaefer's shop, Jack's shop. You know, now we're with Monster Jam, who now everything is way different. And I went in there wanting to prove my worth right away. And I ended up butting heads with certain people, and not on purpose. I just, you know, was set my ways. I mean, crap, I've been doing this for how long, you know, and other people that had been there longer than me, but not in the sport as long as I had, had different opinions about how I should be doing things. So it was what it was, you know. It was a good experience. Met a lot of good people, made a lot of good friends. Deb and Lupe are probably the only ones I still, Adam. Adam Anderson, I'm an Adam, and I tell him this all the time. I'm an Adam Anderson super fan. Not so much a Grave Digger super fan. I hate that thing, but I'm an Adam Anderson super fan. He is probably one of the best dudes I've ever gotten to know. But yeah, he's but those are really the only people left that I actually still talk to from my Monster Jam days.
So what came next for you after you took the step away from Monster Jam?
Well, after Jam, I moved back to Southern Utah, and I partnered up with some people, and we bought the old Destroyer, which was the first, the S10 truck. So we bought that, and we ran it, we campaigned it for a couple of years, and I got to do San Diego, you know, for Monster Jam, which ended up being a fiasco. But problem is, I like bald tires. This comes back to my Calvin Carrington days. Calvin taught me bald tires don't break parts. And he engraved that into my head more than anybody I've ever known. But I mean, that's how he did things. Bald tires don't break parts. And he's right. Bald tires don't break parts. I've had bald tires on all my trucks ever since then, and I rarely break parts. You know, I mean, I've been breaking corners off left and right this last summer. I mean, don't get me wrong, it happens. But you know, tires with good knobbies, you know, they break axles, they break lockers, they break third member. You know, they break stuff, drive lines, you know, brakes. I mean, whatever. But I never have issues with stuff like that. My main, you know, issues, you know, I seem to have are the corners on my truck don't want to stay on, or my motor don't want to have oil pressure. You know, catastrophic things. But no, it's. So when I did that San Diego show in the S10, I had no traction, and I mean there was water. I mean just sitting on top of that, it rained all day on that baseball field, and I mean nobody had traction. But I did go out and I did a pretty good donut contest, and I actually placed second in the donut contest. But I mean I thought I was rocking it. I had the thing spinning. I pulled the steering wheel off, held it out the window, you know, all that dumb stuff, and then I got a low score. But it is what it is. So good times, you know. I bought that truck, did that for a while. We bought the and created the Hillbilly Deluxe Ride truck, and ran it for a while. You know, and those are the trucks I actually took to Hawaii for the first time, which is by far one of my favorite places to go. I love going to Hawaii. We have so many good people over there, just Ohana that have led us into their lives and still do. You know, it's. I've become pretty good friends with Tracy over there, who is basically the motorsports guru, you know, and him and I are working on some things and, you know, to hopefully bring motorsports back over there. And got to do that. I've done that a couple of times now. And, you know, this last time I went over, didn't have a new race truck done in time, but I did have my beach bum ride truck done. So I shipped it over with Jack Coburn. I brought Jack in on that, and then I brought Rick Swanson in. With one of his trucks, and we had a great time. I mean, Rick and Jack, I mean, they talk about it all the time where they would love to go back. So I'm now trying to, don't want to say too much, but I'm working on something out there that I think is going to be a big deal. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So you talked about how bald tires don't break parts. How is that?
Well, if you're spinning, you know, you're not hooking. So the tires spin and spin and spin. They're not hooking on anything. Where if a tire hooks, then you've got tension on axle shafts and ball joints and all that, where it hooks and it tends to break. Where if they're bald, they just sit and spin. So with my bald tires, I can just sit and spin and spin and spin, and then take off, and I can spin donuts, and I can just let that thing spin, and it'll spin forever. So, but it's I prefer the bald tires just for that reason, because I like doing donuts. You know, I like doing all the old school things like that. One of my favorite things to do ever are the wheelies, the wheelie contest. Again, if Eric Swanson's listening, wheelie contest, not jumping contest. I can't tell you how many times I lost in wheelie contest to Eric, because he goes out and just launches his truck. You know, it's like, hello, that was not a wheelie. But anyway, I love doing the wheelie contest and stuff. And if you know how to drive, you can take them. Ball tire truck, and you can stand that thing right up on end. Well, one of the videos in my pre-show was Disturbed, you know, jumping up, setting right on its tailgate, and drug it across that tabletop in Salt Lake City.
So when you jump back in team ownership, the first truck you chose was the old Destroyer truck. Why did you choose that piece to work with?
I always liked resurrecting old trucks. You know, the trucks, the stuff that nobody really wants anymore, that you know, to them it's outdated, it's abused, it's no good or whatever. I always feel drawn to them, you know, like Primetime. That's where it sat for years before I got it, you know, and then DS10, excuse me, DS10 truck, you know, it's, my dad actually set up that deal for us. It had the planetaries that I wanted. Jojo Cypher actually sold me on the Pettibone pie pans. He's been running the exact same set under his truck for 20 some years and hardly ever has issues with them. So I was sold. I mean, that's exactly the direction I wanted to go. A lot of the guys run Clarks, you know, because they're, you can buy aftermarket parts, you can do, I mean, they're everywhere, but they're also expensive. You know, the Pettibones are pretty much just as strong and they're cheap. You know, you can still buy them. You can still find the old parts later on. So that was one of the reasons we chose that truck. Brought it back and completely rebuilt it. We got it. It still had motor training. It still had some stuff in it, but as soon as we got home, we stripped it completely down. We repainted everything. We redid everything. So when we came out, it was pretty much a brand new shiny piece. Still had some things older on it, you know, still had the air spring shocks under it. Just dumb stuff like that, you know, that we needed to upgrade. And eventually we did. I mean, we started working it and we upgraded. And Pablo actually he made me a heck of a deal on shocks, you know, so we ended up putting his under it. And then he actually sold me a transmission as well. And, you know, I mean, he hooked me up. You know, and we were able to upgrade these few things that needed upgrading. And that truck was a blast. It was so much fun to drive. I mean, I destroyed that thing. So it was fun. You know, it was a good time. You know, and things just came to an end. You know, it is what it is. And the trucks just, we started, my business partners wanted to focus more on their business, you know, the towing and whatnot. And so we sold off I helped him sell the ride truck, and then I'm not sure exactly what he did with the race truck, but last I knew he sold it to my dad or something like that. So I don't know, but I've had so many parts saved up for so many years that, you know, we created the Disturb that you see now.
So what was the story behind the Disturb name?
You know, we actually had a raffle. Back when we first bought the truck, the Primetime truck, we had this big boat show, big raffle going on where they brought in, you know, Coca-Cola vendors and they had boats sitting out at the shop. And, you know, we put the truck out on display and we had a contest, you know, named the Monster Truck Contest. Well, there was a lot of names that came in that were just whatever. I mean, I had toyed around with the name Disturbed for a long time, and when I remember this distinctly, but when I one of the first times I walked up to actually talk to Stephanie, my wife, she was in her car, and she had music blaring. I went and knocked on the window, and she rolled the window down, and it was Down with the Sickness blaring on the radio, and that just sealed the deal for me. So Disturbed was born.
So looking, you know, at the more current truck that you have, it's also another chassis that you brought back to life with a former 2 Extreme Racing chassis. But you did a lot of work to it. You know, did you know that you were going to have to put a lot of, you know, effort into rebuilding the chassis when you got it and then putting the Willys body on it? You know, what were your thoughts there?
Well, the only piece left, there was a reason I wanted that chassis. When we split ways with the tow yard, they took the old truck, the ride trucks, the trailer. They took all that stuff, and I basically got to keep my parts and stuff that I had, which was that chassis. And that chassis was so wadded up, but my wife and I went out and picked it up together. So it was the first one, I mean, out of all the trucks that I've had. So the Primetime truck, you know, my dad went out with us and helped me pick it up. You know, the Caberna truck, you know, which is the Jeep, you know, I went down and picked it up, you know. So this Outlaw chat, or the the destroyer truck, you know, my old partners and I went out and picked it up, you know, so and this Outlaw chassis was the first chassis that my wife actually went with me to get. So we went out there, we picked it up, we brought it back, and then it sat around for a year and a half, didn't do anything with it. Well, we ended up sending it up to my dad's place, and he put it on the jig and tried to straighten it out, and it was just, it was too far gone. So the only thing left from the Iron Outlaw chassis is the rear shock tower. That's it. Nothing else is Iron Outlaw. The rear shock tower is the only thing that's left. Everything else is brand new tubing that my dad built me, because he builds really nice stuff, you know, and I begged him and begged him to build me a chassis, and he, I finally wore him down enough that he did. And this is the first time I actually went out and built a new truck instead of buying or resurrecting an old one. So now looking back on it, would I do the same thing? Would I build another new one? I don't know. I mean, because this truck has been amazing. It's been so much fun to drive, and it's, I mean, I've done some pretty fun stuff in it, but I think I actually enjoyed driving the S10 truck more. So, because it was a different animal. It was an older animal where you could take it out and outperform some of these brand new pieces with a 25-year-old truck, you know, and that's saying something. To me, that's saying something.
And now we have the Beach Bum truck. So where did Beach Bum come about?
Well, that was my Hawaii deal. The second time we went to Hawaii, I built a new ride truck, and I wanted to do something for our Ohana, our fans over in Hawaii. So we wrestled around with a couple of names, and we landed on Beach Bum. Because I love the beach myself, and my wife, you know, we hit the beach as much as we possibly can, but we, obviously Hawaii is nothing but beach, you know, so it went over huge there. We decided to name it Beach Bum and shipped it over there and dedicated it to our Hawaiian Ohana, you know, and we went out and we ran it for a month out there and then brought it back. And right after that, I sold it, for other reasons, but ended up selling the ride truck off. And, when, excuse me, sorry about that. After all this COVID stuff hit, we wanted to kind of get away from the dark and scary, you know, COVID is what it is, you know, but people are wanting to get away from the dark and scary, and they wanted to see something more light and airy. So we decided to come out with Beach Bum, something I've been wanting to do. I've been thinking about doing it for a while. And Dylan Finley actually designed the Beach Bum that's on there now. He designed and wrapped it, and but yeah, I mean, we've got a huge response from it. You know, we want to get away from the dark and scary, you know, and we wanted to present a more happy environment, you know, happy, you know, people look at it and they're not like, oh, you know, they look at it and it puts a smile on their face. And that's exactly what Beach Bum has done.
We have another past guest in our comments here, Vincent. Vincent brought it up for me here. It says, it's from David Tucker. He says, remember thrashing with you during show in Clark County Undisturbed, just for you to come back in and thrash on Survivor so I can go out. Good times.
Yeah, it is good times. You know, I met a lot of good people on the road. David Tucker's one of them. You know, I mean, he built some pretty amazing stuff. That T-Max truck of his is incredible. You know, just watching that thing work, it works just like an RC truck. I mean, he built some amazing stuff, you know, and I mean, when I'm on the West Coast and I hear Dave Tucker's going to be there, it's pretty exciting because I know he's a good driver, and, you know, he does a lot with Survivor, you know, drives it quite a bit, but I like watching him in T-Max because that thing's just fun to watch.
Well, I got to ask, what advice do you have for someone wanting to get their foot in the door in the monster truck industry?
Follow your dreams and don't give up. I mean, when I first, I mean, obviously I had my shoe in, you know, my family and, you know, but it wasn't all handed to me. Like nothing was handed to me. This was, I went out and worked to build my name and to do my thing. And, you know, it's, to this day, I feel like I've done my very best to create my own name and do my own thing. You know, so for someone that wants to get into it, a lot of people say stuff like, don't do it, you know, whatever, but do it. I mean, the monster truck industry is amazing. It's not what it used to be, you know, but it's amazing. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of money, you know, but if you want it bad enough, you'll find a way to make it happen. That's the best advice I can give you. Don't give up.
Well, Phil, I think it's that time of the hour. I think it's time for Explain That Photo. I'm sure you know the rules. We're going to bring up a photo on the screen, and you just got to explain that photo. So here we go. We'll start with the first photo.
All right. Wow. That is my very first monster truck. That one, my dad and I, he helped me get it all together. And that is the old Black Magic truck from Kaysville, Utah. I bought it. Well, I had help, but we bought it, brought it home, and redid the entire site. Actually, BJ Johnson painted that truck. All that, the flaming eyeball, the checkers, all that BJ did. But yeah, that's the Suicide Ride truck. That's the first truck I ever owned. I didn't have it very long because, again, I was a dumb kid and thought I knew better. And the guy that helped me get it took it, ended up taking it, and we changed it. It now campaigns as the Super Trucker. So it's the Super Trucker Ride truck now.
Lots of stories behind that. We got another photo for you, and this one was sent in by Levi Jones.
Yeah. Look, only look how young Levi is. That was the beauty before the beast. So that was the show. That was Anaheim. That's where Rod made the mistake of letting me drive it and crashed it twice in the same. Look how pretty it was. It was beautiful. The wrap was brand new, by the way, right before this show. So because the Mexico show I did, the truck looked different. It was just blue. And it said McGruff on the doors. But so he put a brand new wrap on it, and we went to do Monster Jam, and I wrecked it twice. So, yeah, good times.
Good times. This is a good time right here.
Yeah, that is a good one. That was up in Billings, Montana, this last summer. It's my first full stoppie that I was able to do. I've done a couple, not quite completely vertical like this one. You know, I've been practicing them all summer, and this one I nailed, you know. And if you look close enough, you can see the chassis is almost touching the ground. I think that a little bit more practice, I bet I could stand that thing right on its nose, and it'll sit there. So, but yeah, that was Billings out of the Speedway. So that was a lot of fun. That show was a lot of fun. They came out, they built the track. They had a huge bus stack that Ricky Fowler and I actually ended up tandem freestyling, and we tore it up. We had a good time. We were launching that thing just on both directions over that bus stack, and I mean it was fun. That was a good weekend.
Got another photo for you.
That's the good old days. There's the Hulkster. You know, that's one of the trucks I drove for Calvin. That's the old Priority One. That's mainly the truck that I campaigned for Calvin. That's, you know, we put different bodies on it or whatever, and that was a lot of fun. That out there was, I want to say that was Bangor Speedway, but yeah, it was a knockoff of the Bigfoot Hulkster, you know, which you can see it was a cheap knockoff, but it was fun. That was the year, I believe that was 2003, so that was the year that I won the AMTA Freestyle Championship.
Awesome. Another one coming right at you.
Now, this was TV. This was the first, let's see, what was it called? The Outdoor Channel that Monster Moose and my dad and all those guys were doing. I picked up two of those shows. I went all the way down to McAllen, Texas, did that one, and then they held the final one out there in Ogden, actually. And that was coming out of the pits. I blasted through that RV just like that. And, clearly just like that. But I blasted through that RV and then landed, took off, and ran. Funny thing about this picture is they were pissed. Oh, man, they were pissed that it scattered crap everywhere. I mean, I don't know what they were expecting. You can see they put tarps down. you know, but I don't know what they were expecting, but yeah, it blasted that thing apart and there was crap everywhere. They were weeks cleaning up after it.
So you talked about Wally earlier. Does Wally have anything to do with this picture?
Probably. I can almost guarantee that has Wally Turner written all over it.
Well, there you go. Phil, what you got for us?
Man, you know, Brian, I'm looking at your truck list, and I see a couple one-offs in here that I think there could be some good stories behind here, so I'm going to read a couple of them off. One of them is Pitbull. What was the story with you driving Pitbull?
That was Clovis, New Mexico. One of the years I was working for Jack. Something that I don't remember exactly what worked up to it, but Charles ended up – something had happened, and he needed someone to jump in it, and I ended up doing – I honestly don't even remember, but it was one show. I jumped in it and freestyled it or something for him. But, yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, and then – I have to say on that list, my favorite truck I drove out of all of those would probably be Blacksmith, because it was Pablo. I mean, it's what a Pablo truck. I mean, hello. But it was Pablo needed someone to fill in drive for him for, I think Ryan Huffaker was supposed to drive. But something had happened, and I ended up filling in. And I was already there because I had made the trip from Tulia to Albuquerque. It was an Albuquerque show, and I made the trip over there to help my dad out because he was there with two trucks, and Paul was flying in, and something happened with his flight, didn't make it in time, so I was going to jump in and just introduce the truck for him, so he could, and then once he got there, he's going to jump in and run it. Well, long story short, Pablo ended up needing a driver, so I jumped in, and I got to run Blacksmith that whole weekend, and that was a blast. That truck is something else. That's actually the reason Disturbed is a Willys. So because I loved it. I love that the look of it. I love how tight the cab was. I mean, I just felt comfortable in there. So my Disturbed truck is based off of Blacksmith.
And that was a good point. That was actually going to be the next one I brought up. I know my buddy Brian Anger was asking about that one. Another one I see in here was the Operation Freedom Keeper. I don't know if you touched on that earlier.
No, that was just a one-off. You know, Darren had been using my dad, my brothers, and, you know, them to help pitch in and drive. Well, we were actually at a show up in Idaho, and I was helping out Ranger Joe, just kind of filling in, helping him get his new truck dialed in, and Darren came up and said that the next show he was doing was St. George, which is where I lived. And he's like, you want to drive? I was like, hell yeah, I'll drive. So he brought trucks down and we tired them up. You know, we did the whole deal and actually almost flipped that truck over backwards. I hit a raw van, you know, and the thing stood right up on its tailgate and broke the wheelie bar off. But it made it up over it. It was, I don't think Darren liked it, but it was cool.
And then another one I had listed here was Knucklehead.
Knucklehead. Yeah, Jimmy. It was when my brother was working for Jim. They needed someone to fill in. Dawn was going, she had a wedding to go to or something, and Jimmy needed someone with a CDL that could drive his semi with his trucks in it. And then Mike, of course, drove his rig with the two trucks. Well, he called and asked me if I wanted to drive, and I was like, sure, yeah. I wasn't doing anything else, so they flew me out to Kansas, and I feel bad because as soon as I got to Kansas, I got sick, like deathbed sick. I could not even get up out of bed to help put trucks together, and I'm sure that all those guys hated me with a passion while I was there because I just felt like hell, and I ended up, I got better, you know, just in time to take off in the rig. Imagine that, you know, that wasn't planned. But I felt well enough that I took Jim's rig and took off, and I ended up driving all the way up to New Hampshire and then drove Knucklehead, but got out there, helped Mike tire trucks up, you know, and then he went out and rocked the house, of course. And I didn't know, but I guess with Jim's trucks, there's a certain way you're supposed to shift or something. Anyway, I went off a freestyle and I bang shifted it or something. You're not allowed to do that. And I got a break in the transmission. Yeah, so I mean, four or five good hits, blew a donut, and on my way back over, blew the transmission up. So, yeah. Sorry, Jim.
Well,
go ahead, Vincent. You got it?
I got it for you. Phil's hero is in the comments. It's Michael Christensen. Just ask him how Los Banos, California went. So what's the story behind that?
Well, we already actually touched on that. So clearly Mike has not been watching from the beginning. Uh-oh. But Los Banos, California is probably where I drove mischievous for the first time. That's when I did the half a backflip and landed in the cage in the car.
There you have it, Mike. I hopefully you can hang out with us more often, hang loose and whatnot. So
hang loose. But,
yeah, something weird. So you know, Brian, I know you wrote down a list of stories, and where are we at with that list?
Well, actually, I think we pretty much touched on all of them. So looks like one of them that I didn't touch on was back in the Stone Cold truck. We were doing a show, big show outdoors, and it was, I want to say it was Miami, but anyway, was out freestyling, doing my thing. You know, I was so comfortable in that truck. I mean, I'd been in it for a couple of years at this point, and we were working for Calvin. We worked every weekend. I mean, it's like working for Jim now, you know, where Jim stays busy all the time. That's what Calvin was. But so I was living on the road, and so I was extremely comfortable in it. Well, anyway, came out, and mind you, this is another old truck. You know, came out and launched the first jump and took off down the straightaway, whipped the thing around, and then hit another big jump, slap wheelied it, and rode the slap wheelie. One of the first times I've ever done a major slap wheelie like that. And I wheelied that thing all the way across the track. Well, forgot that at the end of the track was the freestyle motorcycle ramp, and it was a dirt ramp, thank goodness. But I set it down right at the base of it, and all I could think was the good old slogan for my dad: when in doubt, throttle out. So I pinned it, and the truck just launched up in the air and kind of went a little over backwards, landed on the wheelie bar, smashed up the wheelie bar, took out the bedsides, and broke the left rear tire off, and she rolled to a stop at the end. It was spectacular, but that was another ass chewing.
Well, Mike might have a story for you. He says, tell him about Sholo.
Nope. I knew that was going to come up. Nope, that story's not coming up.
Okay. That's fair.
Oh man!
Anything else, Mike? Do you have a good Mike Christensen story? We'll throw it back at him.
Oh no!
Good Mike story.
Here we go.
How about the Long Islands in Mexico? So, Mike decided to, maybe it's Costa Rica. Anyway, Mike had decided to try out some Long Islands, and he had one too many. Long story short, he ended up, I think he was in his underwear or something, up on top of one of the buildings at the hotel, just walking across, and he like almost fell in the pool or something like that. But anyway, yeah, he's not allowed to have Long Island iced teas, or at least not very many of them.
Oh, there you have it. That's brotherly love. That's all only in the Christensen family tree. Am I right?
That's right.
Oh man. So, you know, looking through a lot of my stuff here and knowing the career that you had and you still have, you know, do you have any regrets from over the years?
No. No, you know, I've done a lot. I've done a lot in the sport, you know. I mean, it's hard to regret things that you've done because you learn from your mistakes. You know, there's a lot of things in personal life that I've done or haven't done, you know, that you know, you learn from, you know. And I don't want to say regrets, but there's a lot of things, and especially with the monster trucks, I've done a lot, I've seen a lot, I've been around for a long time, and I don't have any regrets because every single one of those grew me to turn me into the person I am today. And I try to live every day the best that I can, and it is what it is. You know, I mean, I love the industry. Like I said earlier, I don't like where the industry is headed, the direction it's headed in. But, you know, and really the reason I say that is because, I mean, the fans are amazing, especially like Hawaii is my favorite place to go because the fans over there just love us, you know, but the fans all over the place, you know, and I say that all the time where the fans over there love us, but the fans everywhere love us. You know, I mean, you roll into town, you're rock stars, you know, and this, even this little tour we did last summer with Ed Beckley. I mean, we were in little teeny tiny towns. I mean, we went into Forsyth, Montana, you know, which is a one stoplight, one horse town, but it drew people in from all the little towns, you know, next to it. It's about 100 miles dead east of Billings. But this little Forsyth town, we did a display, you know, downtown with a couple of the trucks. And then while the trucks were on display, the owner of the movie theater actually came out and invited us to come use their theater. They were playing old John Wayne movies. So it was a lot of fun. We went out and all of us, I mean, all the twins, Swanson's, Ricky Fowler, his daughter, I mean, just everybody that was around. We all, Ken Nowinski was there, you know, we all went out and we watched John Wayne movie in an old school theater in a little town called Forsyth, Montana, you know, but it's stuff like that, that I just, I love and that I will miss when I finally do hang up my race shoes.
So what would you say is your biggest accomplishment in the monster truck industry thus far?
I want to say, you know, I mean, it may not look like much, but like the AMTA championship that I won back in 2003, you know, I had just started out on my own and I was pretty proud of that, you know. But I mean, granted, that was a long time ago now. I would have to say, you know, besides that, would be just owning my own team and doing my thing, you know, just again, if the people that are out there that want to own trucks, like I said earlier, the best thing I could tell you is just don't give up. I mean, if you want it bad enough, you'll find a way. So owning my own trucks, running my own team, my wife is amazing. You know, she has been by my side for this entire adventure, you know, and then my son, you know, he's next generation, you know, my daughter, and I have a granddaughter, you know, and my granddaughter likes to go to the shows and she likes to hang out. And, you know, so being able to still enjoy the family oriented business with my family is just amazing. So, no, I mean, no regrets for sure. And yeah, I mean, my greatest accomplishment is being successful.
So what is the future of your team?
That's a tough question. You know, I've been back and forth. A lot of people know that my stuff's up for sale. You know, I've thought a lot about it. And, you know, I'm sure this is what provoked Wally into throwing that out there. But, you know, I've thought a lot about what's next. And I don't know. You know, I still have the truck. You know, it hasn't sold yet. I've got a couple of guys I'm talking to that are interested. But until it sells, I'm going to keep running it. You know, so keep running it, keep having fun with it, you know, keep building the name, having fun, and, you know, eventually we'll hang it up. But I'm getting to where, you know, I'm kind of getting tired of driving. I mean, the driving part's always the best part about it, but for me, owning the truck now is my favorite part of it. You know, having the truck, doing it my way, you know, my designs, my everything. But I'm looking forward to the next generation stepping in, you know, so whether it's my son or, you know, my daughter or my, you know, one of my kids, you know, I'm looking forward to, if we keep the truck around, that's what's coming.
Well, we got a comment from Stan Christensen. They want to know who is going to drive the truck when you retire.
I'm sure you'd like to, but I don't know. I don't know that you're qualified.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's talk about Stan for a minute. She can't drive a car without pulling out in front of Chevy Silverados. She can't, you know, but I guess that makes her a better driver, you know, because she is the kind of driver. My kid is brilliant. I love her so much. And she is extremely book smart. But when it comes to common sense, she's lacking a little. But she, you know, she has a hard time reading stop signs, and but you know, it, all in all, that might make her a better driver. You know, who cares about that red light? Keep going.
You know, that's a good point. I'm sure if she starts driving, we'll definitely have her on here so she can defend herself. But
she's in the comments, Phil.
Yeah, it's many. You know, that's a good point. Mike Menner's in the comments from the Warhead Mini Monster. Mini Monster dads are always in here. It says Mini Monster time, and I think it's a good idea. You know, you have kids. Do you ever think about, you know, getting a Mini Monster and having them run at some capacity?
Yeah, we actually looked quite a bit into driving, into running. I was actually talking to Lee Plateau a few years ago. They were looking at putting David in one of their trucks because Dave was always on the road with me. And he was already there. He knew the people. He knew how to get around. He, you know, he was driving the race truck in and out of the arenas. And so Lee was actually going to have him start driving one of their mini trucks. And then things just didn't really come out together. So we ended up, that whole deal kind of fell apart, and we looked at buying the old Skull Crusher from Lee, from Plateau, and things just didn't work out. So, yeah, I've definitely thought about it. I mean, the Mini Monsters are really cool. So, I know Dave would love to jump in one. I think Sam's a little too old for it now. She's 25.
Got a comment from Levi Shones, and he says, thanks for being a great mentor. I know we were supposed to do shows together this year. Then you know what happened. Hopefully we can get our rides in at Six Flags next month.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. So we're, as of right now, Six Flags is closed. They're not talking about not even opening until after the Hot Wheels deal is over. So I doubt we're going to be riding any Six Flags rides.
Oh, poor Levi.
Well, hopefully the rides open up for Levi. I know we're going to keep the rides going here. Shared a lot of great stories here tonight. I'm sure we scratched the surface. I'll make this our last question. I always try to ask at the end of every episode. You know, you've accomplished a lot in your career. You've gone up and down the roads, and I'm sure you're always working on the next project, whether your trucks do sell or not here pretty soon. But when it is all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
You know, and I knew that you asked that question, so I thought a lot about it. And, you know, I'm proud of where I come from. You know, I'm proud of my family. You know, my dad and what he's accomplished, my brothers and what they're accomplishing with Throttle Monster. You know, but really, all in all, I want to be remembered. You know, as See, I'm trying to find the right words. I want to be remembered as disturbed, you know, as I fought and fought and fought, you know, from whether it was dealing with David's cancer or, you know, crashing McGruff or working for Jack, working for Calvin. I mean, I went out and I did it, you know, so I want everybody out there to know that no matter what, what you want to do, whether it's flipping burgers at McDonald's or it's buying NASCARs, you know, whatever you want to do, just, I've said it before, don't give up, just work for it, you know, and eventually you'll get there. See, I mean, education is important to me as well. You know, like I have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and an associate's in paralegal. Not a lot of people know that about me, but you know, I've got a good education and yet I'm still a dumb monster truck guy. So, but I just want to be, like I said, I just want to be remembered as the guy that went out and did it. So I found a way multiple times, you know, the world came crashing down on me multiple times and yet I'm still standing. So people can think what they want. You know, I mean, I am who I am and I'm trying to do the best that I can to be the best person I can.
Well, you got that right, and hey, just make sure before you sell those trucks, if you do, maybe David Christensen is qualified to drive your truck. That's what Sam just said.
Right there. Yeah, I don't think he's qualified yet, but we'll see. You know, he's got some training to go through.
All right, Brian. Bill, don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree. A lot of great stories here, like we said, and I'm sure we only scratched the surface. So, Brian, we thank you so much for walking us down memory lane, getting your timeline in the record books, and hopefully we'll see you sooner rather than later out there with your truck.
Absolutely. You know, I'd love to. One of the things that I've thought a lot about is, you know, I'd love to actually, before I'm done, I'd love to find an old truck or tank, you know, to completely restore and take to the Hall of Fame. I think that'll be my hoorah out the door. So, you know, once I sell the truck and move on from actually performing, I think that's what I want to do. I think I want to find an old truck, you know, something that had a name, you know, and I want to restore it and take it to the Hall of Fame, you know, and do stuff like that to give back to the monster truck community that's been so good to me.
Well, we would certainly love to see it, and hopefully we could be along for the ride for it. Brian, thank you again so much for joining us, and we hope to see you soon.
All right, thanks, guys. I had a good time.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. Well, that's another one in the books, but I tell you, when we invited Brian on, we knew his timeline was very extensive, and I don't think a lot of people, again, realize how many teams he was a part of, whether for a weekend or for a couple of years. And that's really cool, and it's so important, you know, that Christensen family tree of monster truck drivers and personnel is so extensive, and it branches so far and wide, just like this podcast. But it's very important to go out there and make your own name, even if you have, like, a last name that's attached to it. And Ryan's the perfect example. He said right from the get-go, I went out and did my own thing. And, you know, he did run with the family team, but – when you look at a lot of his key moments, it was just him doing his own thing or with a different team. And that's very important. And I think that's a very defining character to Brian Christensen.
Definitely. I mean, he's driven a ton of trucks and there's a lot to cover. So, I mean, you get the stories from everywhere. And, you know, we talked about the truck list. He's driven a lot of trucks. And I know you keep track of that. What's the number on the trucks for Brian Christensen?
His number's at 30. I'm sure we could be forgetting some stuff. We tend to go over it every now and then. So I remember the first time actually I asked Brian when I was really kind of hitting home a lot of the lists. He came out swinging with his phone and he had a list ready to go. So that's super cool. Tonight he came prepared with a list of stories. So Ryan's on top of it. I give him kudos because he knows the history of the sport and he remembers his own. And I know a lot of the events can sometimes run together and he seems to remember everything. So that makes it easy on my part for a historian. It makes it easy on our part when we're doing a podcast and enjoyable for everybody out here that was tuned in and listened to this, whether live or later on in the archives.
Definitely a very fun episode tonight. And, hopefully we can have Brian on again at some point. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. But one thing's for sure, we'll be here next week for another episode. If you miss any of our past episodes and want to rewatch Brian's, make sure you're on our Facebook page. You go to that video tab, live podcast episodes. You can see all of our past episodes. I mean, some of Brian's other family members have been on here. You know, his brother Mike giving a hard time. We did a live podcast with Mike at an event. Paul Jensen was on here as well. And a lot of the guys that Paul or Brian went up and down the road with over the years, they've been here with us. And a lot of great stories. Wally Turner, another one. So if you want to catch some of those past episodes, go to our archives, live podcast episodes here on our Facebook page, or audio only, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Radio.com, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Stitcher, whatever, Deezer. There's so many platforms out there. Wherever you can find sound, wherever you can download those podcasts on the go, in the gym, at work, wherever, you can find Monster Truck Outlaws of the West. Our full archive is there as well. You know, keep on rocking and rolling here. You never know who's coming up next on the podcast. Tell a lot of great stories. And one thing's for sure, I'm out of words. What can I say? I'm just very excited to be here.
You want on the podcast, send us a message, and we'll add them to the list. We'll do our best we can to get them on.
Yeah, you know what I say. That's why, you know, yada, yada, yada. We end the show the same
way. I got you.
You know what we do. We'll be here next week with another episode. So be safe out there.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah, shingles on the roof and nuts and bolts and stuff. So, yeah, we'll see you here next week for another live podcast episode. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.